Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska. And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 8. On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Consequence Podcast Network.
And welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks for making your way here. If you're not already subscribed, I hope you'll do so. You're going to get new interviews just like this one every single week from Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence. YouTube for the video versions, or again, anywhere you get your podcast from, you can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With, and please do give this series a rating and leave a review while you're at it. Those always help out so much. I'm always so grateful to see your names on there. We've had some great guests drop by lately, too. Gendy Tartakovsky, you know him as the legendary animator and creator of Dexter's Laboratory and Samurai Jack and Star Wars Clone Wars and Hotel Transylvania. I talked with the cast of Alien Earth, including Timothy Oliphant, Sidney Chandler, and Noah Hawley, the creator of that one. Amy Berg, the director behind It's Never Over, Jeff Buckley, the new documentary. They Might Be Giants dropped in. Luciana Buchanan from The Night Agent, currently starring in Chief of War on Apple TV+. I talked with the cast of Happy Gilmore 2 and the director, Kyle Newacek. Michael Clifford from 5 Seconds of Summer was here. Ben Folds, the cast of Zombies 4, Wet Leg, Caroline Polachek, and Allison Goldfrapp. Just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. That's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, it's a special Rewind episode, looking back on my interviews with both DJ Shadow and one half or two-thirds of the Black Eyed Peas, however you look at that. DJ Shadow, of course, the California turntablists who turned crate digging into an Olympic sport. He built his rep on sample-heavy, genre-melting records like Introducing, while also making himself a go-to collaborator for artists who like their beats, both cinematic, maybe a little dangerous. And then from the Black Eyed Peas, Taboo and Apple D App. As again, it's either half or two-thirds, whatever era you're looking at. But either way, they've been riding the pop rap roller coaster since the late 90s, from the underground LA club gigs to topping every chart in the hemisphere. Sometimes with anthems, sometimes with earworms that you'd swear might be designed in a lab. That's what you're looking at today for this special Rewind episode. And we're going to start in 2017 with DJ Shadow. He called in to talk about, at that point, the record The Mountain Will Fall, his first artist show tour in 4 years, again, at that point. He explained the difference between DJ gigs and full-on performance of his own music, how revisiting old multitracks felt like cracking open a sonic diary complete with long-forgotten scratches and experiments. He discussed breaking away from being sample-heavy, avoiding backward-looking nostalgia, and keeping his sound forward-thinking. We also got to talk about him working with Timothy Leary samples on Three Ralphs, the song, and introducing the world to rapper Ernie Fresh, praising his early 90s-inspired style. All that and more, part one of this special Rewind episode. It's Kyle Meredith with DJ Shadow.
Hi, Kyle.
Loving the album, The Mountain Will Fall. Fantastic. Another fantastic record for you. And you're on tour right now, right?
Yeah, I'm out in Europe. I've done, I guess, about 10 shows so far.
Yeah.
And be out here for another few weeks.
I guess I read that the first show of the tour, this was like your first show in 4 years.
Well, it's what I call the first artist show, and the reason I phrase it that way is that because, you know, I'm a DJ and I make records as well, mm-hmm. And I'm restless and I like to do different things to keep myself entertained and fresh. I do like an artist show in the traditional sense, just like a rock band would, where, you know, it's all my own music, a little bit of the old, a little bit of the new, with, you know, visuals and stuff like that, because and I haven't done that since 2012. That's when my last, you know, primary tour ended. And then since then, I did a lot of DJ gigs where I'm just playing, you know, a lot of other people's music, just like any other DJ would. So that's the difference there between the two descriptions.
Is there still nerves that go into this, though, that, you know, I guess, you know, when you're playing the other people's music, there's a bit of that crutch, but here it is, it's your own stuff, like this far in, and especially after a 4 year gap, you know, how long does it take for the muscle memory to kick in? And I got this.
Yeah. I feel like a few weeks at least, but I also think that, If the last couple of tours are any indication, it kind of evolves slowly over the course of like a year or 2 years. It depends on how long I'm out on the road. And mm-hmm. I mean, obviously the primary goal is to continue to, you know, be inspired when you're up there. Cause the last thing you want to do is give people the impression that it's not difficult or it's not challenging or that you're not, you know, pushing your own boundaries. So, I mean, I think it's necessary to kind of switch it up a little bit over the course of the tour.
Yeah. So do your songs evolve live? Do they change course from what the album is?
Yeah. I mean, the show as it exists at this moment is, you know, it's formatted as a pretty complex mix of a lot of different elements of a lot of different songs of mine. And one of the reasons I was able to do that this time is that I, since the last tour, I transferred a lot of my old ADAT tapes, my old multi-tracks down. For a long time, a lot of the multi-tracks of my songs were kind of in limbo. And I, a few years ago, took the, you know, a couple of months out just to kind of do that process. So I have access to a lot of elements from the songs that I haven't had access to for, you know, any of the other tours.
It's finding like your old diaries right there.
Yeah, it was intriguing. I mean, there's definitely, and there's, you know, tracks where I tried different scratches or different ideas and in the mix process just decided that the track was stronger without those touches. So mm-hmm. It is kind of funny to go back in time and pry open those those multi-tracks and see what was left behind.
Yeah. Do you have any just big grimace moments? Like, no, that still has to stay left behind. That's not, that was there for.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. But it's not like I was, you know, trying a guitar solo or anything like totally out of character.
You've been doing this for a very long time at this point, probably over 20 years is what I'm kind of gathering.
Yeah.
I mean, how hard is it?
Since my first single came out.
How hard is it for you to find new directions for music and innovations? I mean, I know the big catch for this album is, you know, you got away from being so sample heavy, and the word, which I find fun, contemporary, keeps popping up, which is just an odd word, I think, to put in the DJ world, contemporary. But, you know, for what you're doing, though, how hard is it to find that new direction and to try to figure out how to reinvent yourself over and over and over?
Well, I mean, I feel like as long as I take a long time between albums, it's not really that hard. I mean, fortunately, I didn't get into doing music to be in the conventional, you know, every year and a half or 2 year album cycle, because that's just not the type of artist I am. And that's, you know, fortunately, I've always been on labels that haven't forced me to be something that I don't want to be in. And so I take a long time between albums because I'm listening and learning from my peers. And I mean, for example, my last record was composed in mostly in 2009 and 2010. And when I think of all the ideas just in electronic music alone that didn't exist, that exist now, that didn't exist then, you know, it pretty much guarantees that my album is going to be completely different, you know, from the last one. And I feel like that's what I need to continue to evolve, is just for the creative energy of my peers to kind of light the way for me, and then apply my own ideas and my own personality to the new landscape as I understand it.
It's interesting because electronic music and the world of electronic music like works so differently than just about any other genre for that fact right there. I mean, you can take time between records and you can come back and people are still interested in what you have to say, where if you were a rock band or a folk band or a country band or anything like that, like that doesn't usually happen. Like once you're gone for 5 years or more, you know, you sort of become time stamped in an era, and you've been able to escape that. I mean, do you give that to the genre or, you know, hopefully as well to the strength of your music?
Yeah, I think that if your goals are pop oriented or kind of mainstream oriented, I think it's pretty clear that, you know, it's on, you know, it's in the music that you make. It's in the way that you carry yourself. And I think it's pretty clear that's never really been my intent. That's never really been my, you know, I didn't go to, you know, any kind of showbiz school or get any kind of showbiz training. It's pretty obvious, you know, when you look at the way I dress and the way I carry myself and the music that I make. I mean, I don't really have a lot of interest in crossing over or being a mainstream artist. So I think that lends itself to a certain credibility within the fan base, you know, and a certain understanding with the people who are attracted to my music, that there's a genuineness there, hopefully. And hopefully, you know, because of all the other things that I do as a DJ and the mixes that I do and the, you know, I have a label that's a free label that, you know, all the music is free to download. And I think if people are interested in my music and they want to explore further what I have to offer, I think that what they find is I'm a genuine music lover and a music fan. And I think that for other music fans, that's something that I think people appreciate.
And we'll be right back right after this.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with DJ Shadow.
Yeah, I was talking to a rock singer the other day, and they were talking about how ageism in pop music, you know, is something that they have to fight against. But again, in electronic world, I never find that's a problem. I mean, here you are. You're 44.
Well,
and you sound as relevant as ever, and people treat you, or so it seems to me, and you might have a different take, but people treat you as relevant as, you know, when you came out. Like, it doesn't seem like you have to battle that as much as the pop singer would or something.
Yeah, I suppose there's some truth to that. I mean, probably because, for one thing, I don't really push my face as an asset, you know what I mean, or as a I've never really put my picture on my album cover or, you know, done a lot of things where it's like, look at me, because that's not really what it's about for me. Mm-hmm. And so as a result, I think a lot of people don't know what I look like and they don't know how I've changed through the years. So it's less of an issue. But I mean, you know, I also think that some of what you're talking about, I think, also happens to artists when they decide that they don't want to pursue an agenda of making music that's evolving. And, you know, I think it's a big challenge to, regardless of the genre, for people who make music to continue to be inspired and continue to find inspiration. And I think what happens a lot of times, particularly with genres who I think, you know, the glory days are to some extent in the past, like I would argue rock and roll or blues or jazz or you know, a lot of music that, and maybe even hip hop, I don't know. But I think that eventually what starts to happen is people just kind of go, you know what, I miss my roots. I'm going to go back to my roots. Mm-hmm. That's all well and good, but I think those artists shouldn't be surprised when a large portion of their audience kind of tunes out, because, you know, I think people deep down want to be inspired by new ideas. I think the past is seductive and the past is wonderful, but, and there's a lot of lessons to be learned from the past and a lot of good ideas that got lost in the past. But I think if your music becomes backward thinking and backward looking rather than forward thinking and forward looking, I think that's the point when a lot of artists complain about ageism, because I feel like they have kind of courted that in their actions.
I'm such a huge fan of the song Three Ralphs.
Oh, cool.
On this record. And the time has come. Are you ready, Ralph? Whose voice am I hearing there? What is that?
That's actually Timothy Leary. And it's certainly not the most original sample I've ever pulled up, but
it's great though.
The amazing thing about, the amazing thing about sampling is that, you know, you can listen to a record that's been used and before, and you can kind of go, well, okay, that doesn't really resonate with me right now. But then you can listen to it 15 years later and go, actually, that's kind of funny. I just started working on this song, you know, with a sample that says Three Ralphs. And, you know, here he is talking to someone named Ralph, and I wanted to take the track in a different direction. It's actually one of the kind of technical themes of the record is playing a little bit with arrangement and making things, you know, breaking things up a little bit and having the arrangement be a little more free form and almost like songs within songs, mm-hmm. rather than your traditional, you know, build, drop outro, which, you know, is the basis of so much electronic music. So, yeah, that's who that is in that sample.
I mean, maybe it's the unconventional nature of that song is the reason why I like it so much, too, because it does, it just gives, I mean, all your music's given a mood, you know, throughout every album, and this is just a new mood for this song, and I don't know, for whatever reason, it really connected with me. And then the other
that's
one,
awesome.
You've introduced the world to Ernie Fresh.
Yeah.
Like, this guy
yeah,
is
he's
great.
Yeah, a friend of mine, an artist named Mo Fono, who I put out some of his music on my label, he played me a demo a couple of years ago, and it was kind of a drum machine thing, and it had a rapper on it, and I listened to it, and I said to him, it's really hard to find someone who knows how to write authentically old school without resorting to a lot of the old school cliches. Mm-hmm. And I guess to put even a finer point on it, usually when people try to evoke an old school feeling, they go back to the 80s, whereas he went back to the early 90s, and there's kind of a big difference. So yeah, he writes in a very kind of Kool G Rap way, and ever since I heard that demo, I kind of tucked it away in the back of my mind, like, hey, if I ever come up with something, I'd want to work with this guy. And this track, this demo, just kind of came up out of nowhere while I was working, and I liked it, and I thought, wow, I think I'm ready to do another scratch track on the record. I kind of feel like it would be, in a weird kind of way, relevant, more so now than maybe at any other point in the last 10 years. And I decided I wanted all the scratches to be unusual and off the beaten path. I didn't want to use the same old scratch sounds everybody uses and scratch tracks. And then similarly with the rapper, I didn't want a big name. I didn't want anything like that. So I approached Ernie and yeah, we knocked it out, and I'm really proud of the track because it's one of those times when you know what a track could be if you can get to the finish line and make all the right decisions. And yeah, so I mean, his performance and the 3 days or so it took to get all the scratches down and the way I wanted them, you know, it was worth it. It was fun.
Yeah, well, it's one of my favorite songs I think I've heard this whole year, and you know, I'm so happy it's on there and that you've pulled him out. And congratulations, awesome. By the way, you got your first number one, right, for the dance electronic charts.
Yeah, that's, I mean, fun. It's you know, I take all that kind of stuff with a grain of salt because, you know, it's I had to explain to my mom, actually. She's like, hey, number one. And I'm like, well, it's not number one. It's like number one of a particular type of chart. And
but it is
like,
a number one. And, you know, that's we need to take any moment, you know, for good points in this day and age, you know. And So
I agree. I mean, I'm trying to get better about stuff like that.
Well, we'll be here to help you. I'll celebrate this album too. The Mountain Will Fall. DJ Shadow, Josh, thank you so much for calling today and for the record and the music and everything. And hopefully we'll see you around.
Yeah, absolutely. Hopefully I'll be there soon. Next year, hopefully.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, take care.
Take care. See ya.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. All right, for this part two, we head back to 2018 when I jumped on the line with Tabu and Apple Diep of Black Eyed Peas to talk about street living, calling it a return to the socially conscious style of the early Black Eyed Peas and a raw diagnosis of America's current climates. From immigration reform to the prison industrial complex, this interview might be, 7 years old or so, but it's the exact same things. The exact same things are happening in today's climate. And we got to discuss their on-the-ground activism from Standing Rock to opening schools in the Philippines and how art and activism form the core of this latest chapter of theirs. So let's get into this part two of this Rewind episode. It's Kyle Meredith with Tabu and Apple Diep of Black Eyed Peas.
What's up, Kyle?
Hi, guys. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. I was just at the gym trying to get our fitness in, getting ready for Black Eyed Peas touring in the summer.
I didn't know the tour was happening. Yeah. That's exciting.
Well, we're just getting ready, man. We're just getting ready for all the exciting things that are to come for the Peas.
One of those exciting things, and I definitely want to dive right into this, is the new single Street Livin', which I gotta say was instantly maybe my favorite Black Eyed Peas song I've ever heard. I'm not kidding.
Thank you, man. It's very reminiscent of our early work when we first came out in 1997 or 98 with Behind the Front. You know, we were inspired by a lot of bossa nova and jazz, which we incorporated with hip-hop, and we've always been a socially conscious group. And it was only right that we came back with the huge message of the state of the climate in the U.S., but also around the world.
It hits on a lot. And I got to say, there's probably still loads that you could have pointed at, which is crazy, you know, like when you're trying to pull a focus on it, how did that all come together with this song?
Basically, just the mood of our society and what's going on. It's like a cancer that's been growing, and we just wanted to diagnose what's going on and put it in the forefront and, you know, send that message out, because as people we're being desensitized with all the, you know, distraction in front of you from social media, but you know then things happen and then you tend to forget about it real fast, and it just keeps on happening, and we just wanted to point that out.
I mean, there's always plenty to push against. For you guys, does it feel different with this administration than anything, you know, that you've dealt with before?
Definitely. With everything that's going on, I feel like people didn't really like pay attention into politics until now. Now it seems like everyone is really tuned in and having opinions. So, you know, that's what we feel is what's going on.
Yeah. And we always say that street living is kind of like the diagnosis of what's happening, you know, with all the craziness, with the immigration reform to the prison complex, to all the things that we address in street living. It's like when you go to a doctor's office and they tell you you have high blood pressure or worse, you have cancer. A lot of people don't want to hear that. You know, you get a sense of reality and you get slapped across the face like, yo, holy shit, this is some real stuff that's happening. And that's what we get with street living, is maybe it might not have been as nice as Where's the Love as far as like the conversation and the narrative, but we had to come with something that was raw and genuine and show the world exactly what's happening in the U.S. with the craziness going on. And, you know, it's good that, you know, people know that the first thing that put us on the map was Where's the Love, a song that was socially conscious and had a message. And us coming back in 2018 with a message is a direct reflection of that time period for us.
And I mean, you all have always had a good history of working with the community, you know, hitting the streets and the pavement, as they say. But I know two especially noteworthy things of lately. I mean, Tabu, you were at Standing Rock, and Apple, you've been opening schools in the Philippines, right?
Yes. Yeah, you know, so beyond the song, you know, we're putting in actions ourselves. You know, we come from that environment, and we were given this opportunity. So we have to start in our community, our kids, our neighborhood, and we as Black Eyed Peas, we make sure that we provide that opportunity, education to the youth, because I think that's where we have to start fixing it. Because when people don't have opportunities, they resort to negativity, and that's what's happening in our inner cities.
Mm. And also, like, all the individual, you know, work that we had been doing in communities kind of prepared us for this bigger fight, which was calling out the climate as far as what's going on in the U.S. Because, you know, when we took a hiatus in 2011, we all had been doing individual work, but preparing for this, you know, reemergence of Black Eyed Peas. And we did it in a way where, you know, we didn't follow the same formula of, like, trying to go after radio spins and trying to get on every single television show and every trying to compete with the stuff that we did in the past. We just said to ourselves, like, let's do art and activism to the best way of our capabilities, so that, you know, art and activism is the crossroads of this new Black Eyed Peas project, which encompasses the graphic novel Masters of the Sun. It also has the augmented reality and virtual reality that is part of this whole presentation. And Street Living was just the soundtrack or the sentiment of the graphic novel Masters of the Sun.
Now, I'd love to hear more about that. What is Masters of the Sun beyond just a graphic novel?
So Masters of the Sun started as a screenplay that Will.i.am was kind of formulating a couple years ago, and along the way the team started formulating. We got Ben Jackendoff to help facilitate the writing of it. We got Damian Scott, who did Spider-Man. We got him to illustrate the graphic novel. And then along the way of putting it all together, you know, our team created the gold embossment, the paper layout, so that it's a collectible. And, you know, along the way I built a partnership with Marvel going to Comic-Con, and I held on to that relationship for a long time until the right moment presented itself. And this was actually, like, a perfect way to bring in Marvel and Black Eyed Peas for this amazing experience. And what I didn't know is that Will.i.am had been, you know, working on some partnerships with technology as far as augmented reality and virtual reality. And our in-house team actually recreated the whole, you know, the tech side and the creative side all together, because we're in-house. And we like to look at it as the first virtual reality studio and augmented reality studio in the Black Eyed Peas camp.
And the whole story of Masters of the Sun is, like, it's about the community and hip-hop, how it started in New York in the 80s, and then the community was plagued with crack and violence and weapons. And then there's a crew called the Blastmasters, and the Zulu X and the Blastmasters, basically they're a crew that try to take over their community back from this alien entity that plagued the community. And also it has Egyptology, it has conspiracy theory. So it's like it's a comic book. It's also parallel to what's going on. But we made it more like, you know, it's zombies or the crackheads. And so it's just like a blockbuster hip-hop comic book.
That's cool.
And also what was cool is along the journey, we were able to bring aboard an amazing cast to actually be the voices of the augmented reality and the virtual reality. You know, from Jason Isaacs from Harry Potter to John DiMaggio, to Rosario Dawson, Queen Latifah, Karis One, Rakim, and a lot of other hip-hop artists. And then when we got the blessing to have Stan Lee himself be the narrator, that was when we knew that it was really, really special in the comic book world.
Now, are you guys going to be releasing more music through this, or is Street Living kind of the only one that ties to it?
No, yeah, we got a whole what we call the soundtrack for the comic book. We got a whole album, and it's in that, the album is, It's kind of like in that mood, right? The Street Living to social conscious song, and more like behind the front, they're bridging the gap sound.
We joined forces with Hans Zimmer and Keith Harris and Black Eyed Peas to score the entire virtual reality and augmented reality, so that, you know, you'll hear music when you experience the graphic novel. But a lot of that music also has actual songs that we created that will be part of the whole experience.
I know one of the things, you know, I think people are confused about is you're also paired down to a trio. Is that the way it is now for this?
Yeah, we actually started as a trio, you know, and we decided to make it about the graphic novel and you know, creating new characters that go along with this experience, so that it's not a reflection of what we've done in the past. It's actually something new. We want to create new IP, create new characters for the Black IP experience, and, you know, yeah. And, you know, it's always cool when you're able to just recreate this new project, and that was what we wanted to rely on more on, like, who, you know, who's front and center, who does what. It was more about the graphic novel, it was more about the partnerships with Marvel, you know, and for us, we're blessed to be able to continue doing what we do, and we're excited to bring this new graphic novel to fruition.
And Black Eyed Peas, you know, we're family, so we're beyond the three of us. We got like a tag team, and then we collaborate with other, you know, different upcoming singers. And Fergie, she's family, you know, she's doing her thing right now, and we support that. You know, it's always gonna be family, though.
Cool. Yeah, you know, Black Eyed Peas, we've always had different pieces to the equation. The foundation has always been me, Will I Am, and Apple. You know, when we first started, we had Kim Hill, we had Macy Gray, Estero, Noel Skag, we had Terry Dexter. So there's always been different components. On this album, we're featuring different artists, up-and-coming artists, artists that are already in the industry, just to always continue the rotation of the cast of characters, so that you always get something new and refreshing. And that's the cool thing about Black Eyed Peas is we are a family. We're an enterprise that wants to provide opportunity for other artists that are coming up as well.
Well, I love what you guys do. It's always exciting to kind of follow you all and see what's happening. This project here sounds like one of the coolest things you pulled off yet, though.
Thank you, man.
Very exciting. You know, something new for us. It keeps our enthusiasm going.
Well, thank you, guys. It was a pleasure talking to you. I look forward to hearing and seeing all the rest of the stuff.
Thank you, man. Cool. Appreciate that.
And there you go. My thanks to Taboo, Apple D App, and DJ Shadow. And my thanks to you for checking out the episode. Hit that subscribe button before you get out so you can keep up with all the interviews that I put out every single week. You can find us at Spotify and Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. And please do give the series a rating and leave a review while you're at it. And after that, you can head over to WFPK.org, where I do a show every weeknight starting 6 p.m. Eastern. 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s, the best in new music, bonus interviews, lots of music news as well. In fact, one of my recent shows features some classics and favorites from Liz Phair, Crowded House, The Wonder Stuff, Debbie Friday, Modest Mouse, Jenny Lewis, Primus, Samara Joy, The Buggles, Lovin' Rockets, Flock of Dimes, Aretha Franklin, Paul Weller, Brian Ferry, and my interviews with Del the Funky Homo Sapien, Corey Taylor of Slipknot, and actor Michael Shannon. That's what you get when you tune in weeknights, 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always at Kyle Meredith. I do hope you like and follow along. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.